morning. Welcome to our meeting. It is 9 a.m. on October 6, 2025, and time to convene a regular meeting of the Snohomish County DPUD Board of Commissioners. I'm Sid Logan, President of the Commission. Joining me today are Commissioner Tony Olson, President, Commissioner Julieta Altamirano Crosby, our Secretary, John Hoffman, our Chief Customer Officer, Colin Willenbrock, our Chief Operating and Legal Officer, Allison Morrison, Clerk of the Board, Jenny Rich, Deputy Clerk of the Board, Morgan Stolzner, Deputy Clerk of the Board. Please mute or turn off your cell phones or other electronic devices at this time. I will start with the flag salute. If you would like, you may join me.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Copies of the agenda are located on the deputy clerk's table near the entrance. Commissioners, are there any items to be added or changes to be made to the published agenda?
I have none.
Comments from the public is item two on today's agenda, and that's when the board will hear comments for items that are not listed on today's agenda. Comments will be limited to 5 minutes, and persons shall be recognized to speak from the sign-up cards located on the deputy clerk's table near the entrance. If joining by Zoom, click raise hand, or dial *9 if by phone, I will call on you to speak at the appropriate time. If you've called in on a phone, you will need to dial *6 to unmute. This meeting is being recorded. When addressing the board during the meeting, please step up to the podium, use the microphone, state and spell your name, and indicate where you're from. Please remain at the podium while you speak and address the commissioners and not the audience. If you have documents or other materials to enter into the records, please hand them to the deputy clerk who will distribute them to the board. We appreciate your cooperation with all our procedures. Please note that all motions receive an automatic silent second from the board. This ensures that all issues can be brought to the floor for discussion. So first, we'll start out with our favorite thing, recognition declarations. Our employee of the month for October is Hoon Ha. Introducing Hoon is Janine Hartsberger. Good morning.
Good morning. Is this on? Yeah. So I'm Jeannie Hirschberger, Manager of System Planning and Protection. It is my distinct pleasure today to introduce you to Hoon Ha, our October Employee of the Month. So Hoon has been working in the distribution space since even before he graduated from Washington State University. He had a Standards Department internship at Pacific Power and Light in Oregon. Then he worked for a few different companies in Alaska and Washington doing distribution design before a phone interview in 1995, which led him to a customer engineering job in Monroe. In 1999, he transferred to the distribution design team, where he became the lead of commercial design until we lured him away in 2013 to join planning and protection. So as the distribution planner for South County, Hoon partners with his protection partner to provide excellent customer service to the most populated part of our county. He contributes directly to bolstering the operational reliability and resiliency of South County. It is a more populated area of the county, so Hoon's work has been instrumental in lifting the load moratorium that we had for a while in South County and providing service to light rail. So you might expect that Hoon would be well recognized in South County, and that's true, and it goes far beyond that. He is instrumental in our annual capital plan and budget, which sets out spending for over $100 million of our customer owners' money. So it's a pretty important role. He was instrumental in getting our revised operational or decision support tool for planning some time ago, and he still keeps it limping along with baling wire and duct tape. Hoon is a leader in a lot of different areas. In addition to the capital plan, he's had work which touched a lot of projects. Especially notable are ones that previously had been marked by friction and contention, and now those relationships have turned into collaborative partnerships with agencies which serve our same customer base. So Hoon's working style kind of embodies the new engagement norms that have come to characterize the new PUD. It's very collaborative, approachable, and a team player. He has strong technical skills, and he always gets to the crux of a problem. He's very thorough to get to the root of those problems. When the flower shop in Edmonds calls with a complaint about their voltage, Hoon brought to light a problem with the substation load tap changer on the transformer. So Hoon would be the last person to tell you about the contributions he's made. He was affectionately known as the Brown Water Engineer because he took on the projects nobody wanted. Wastewater treatment plants in Edmonds, Picnic Point, Lake Stevens, Everett, all of them pretty much. So he's known for dropping everything to help out any other person, to help them figure out questions, help them succeed. So this recognition is not a sudden decision. It feels like the accumulation of 30 years of quiet, steady, and excellent contributions to the success of the district. His knowledge is both broad and deep for all things budget, electric system design, and planning. So the people he's influenced, formed, and molded can't be measured or counted. Those are some of the reasons why this recognition is so fitting.
Okay, don't sit down. You gotta conquer with us.
Come on. Congratulations. Nice to talk to you.
Oh, yeah.
Congratulations. Nice to meet you. Yeah.
Congratulations. Meet you.
Well, let me get the phone. Let me get the.
Well, we're doing. We'll do a little talk.
Okay.
A little speeches, some pictures, and some family here.
Yes, sir.
I do. So, first of all, we have this lovely trophy for your trophy case. So, if you don't have one, it sounds like you're the person who could build one.
I have hockey trophies.
There you go. You know, I'll say, reading through what you've done for the utility, you're just a phenomenal team player, improving everywhere you go. Very interesting to read. And you're the person who might be able to answer a question I asked in the commission a few years ago. That is, you've got PSC putting power into the light rail. You've got Snohomish putting power into the light rail. And so as the train moves back and forth, whose electrons are getting where? Yeah. We don't have to answer that. I just think it was an interesting thought, experiment. Yeah. And we also have something in common. We both grew up in Alaska.
Oh, did you grow up
there? Yeah, you
were there.
You went to, you grew up in Fairbanks, and I went to college in Fairbanks.
Hey, UAA. Oh, no, UAA.
Yeah, what a cold place.
Engineer to engineer.
Yeah, so thank you for everything you do.
Well, thank you so much for all that you do, and I'm impressed with everything that you bring and the awareness. Very cool projects. Light rail is the innovation, and thanks to that, I mean, can connect direct with the airport in Seattle. So thank you. Yeah. I really appreciate that. And well, this is the man. Something.
What do you do?
Certificate. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Sly.
Bye. Your write-up is phenomenal. And you mentioned towards the end, you spoke to generations. And how you have learned, but in reality, you have given what you've experienced, and you and I know the good, bad, and the ugly.
Yes.
And what that experience and your work ethic and your expertise has done for those that have come after you. And I'm really, really impressed. And I hope that you take that to heart, that what you bring to the team is unique. You know, that history is very, very important. And you worked in standards and...
Yeah, when I first started out in my internship.
Oh, that must have been fun back then.
Yeah, it was fun back then.
Yeah, right.
A lot of old-timers, you know.
I used to work out there.
Oh, you did?
Okay, so you don't have to be.
You weren't there specifically. I don't.
No, I did capital. You do capital now, right?
Yeah.
I did the, if you can believe, didn't know anything about it. Got stuck with developing the capital budget. Oh. I didn't know a track hole from a back hole. Somehow I got the budget. So I also respect you for that. That takes a lot of coordination.
Yeah, that's a lot of work, and got a good team.
Yeah, yeah, and negotiation.
Back together, yeah.
And have a, I'm going on too long, maybe. Sure. I have a question. You mentioned a tool that, what was that?
Oh, it's called AIS, the, I forget what it means.
It's a project prioritization optimization software that just ranks and scores our capital plan projects, okay. So we can prioritize the right ones for them.
So, how long have you been working with?
It's been, shoot, just 6-8 years, something like that, yeah.
Well, old Tony, with two other engineers, tried to get something similar a few years prior to that.
Yeah.
And we were never successful at it. It wasn't high on the priority for the company.
Yeah.
But I can hear from what you're saying that it is very helpful.
It is helpful. And we're going to develop that some, maybe another product.
Right, right. That. Yeah.
We've gone down that path and we have some experience. And
yeah.
We're a new tool.
So are the priorities then also working on the availability of the different, like the design people, does it work in the time frame of, in terms of the chart for a project, the timing of the project, or is it just prioritizing the need?
Oh yeah, it does integrate the timing of the project, and a lot of that too is based on the SMEs. The project engineers knowing what timing is realistic, and it factors that in. I mean, it's not, the tool in itself is not, ideal, or it could be better in that sense, but we work with it. You know, we've got a lot of people just know a great deal about their
savings
project.
Of that, you know, and knowing what window. You know, this one, the win this window and that.
Right.
Sorry, folks. This is something
passionate about, right?
Well, I was at one time. It didn't do me any good. Anyway, I'm very impressed with your problem.
Thank you.
I thought I was a nerd. You're picking
the competition.
I have nothing more to say. I do have a picture. Can I show my picture?
That's me in the office.
Yes. Right or what? Does he not look?
All right, let's set these over here and get a picture. No, here, hold the trophy.
Okay.
And then we'll take a picture of the four of us, and then we'll get some family up here.
You want to introduce the family then?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, right here. And scooch in just a little bit. Perfect. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. And you have some family here.
Yeah, I have my whole family. These are the ones that are with me 24/7. my wife, Beth. I'll go in order here. My oldest son, Austin. And my eldest daughter, Emma.
You want to be here with me?
Sure. My youngest daughter, Lindsay. And then my mother-in-law, my great mother-in-law. Great in the sense that she's very supportive. She's, you know, helped raise my kids. And her name is Jean.
Nice to meet you.
Hey, we're really split and
okay.
We'll take one cloud.
But you guys like each other.
So. Yeah.
All right, a little bit in. Thank you. Perfect.
Okay. All right. Commissioners, if we'll step out, they can take a family picture. Maybe that'll be their Christmas card photo.
It's like you guys have done this before.
Twice.
Perfect. Thank you.
All right.
Congratulations.
So you do have an opportunity to use the mic if you want to say anything. You don't have to.
Yeah.
Some do, many don't.
Yeah, maybe. I've been here a while and I've seen various changes throughout the district, but I think that, and I wrote this up in my response too, but one of the things that I think I'm proud of in terms of the PUD is the diversity in the workplace. I think that when I started from now, for example, a lot more women in this workplace. And, you know, as you can see, my family, they're mostly female. And so they have provided that perspective where they're, you know, a strong influence. I just feel like that's very impactful to this country and to the UD in itself. So that part of it, I think I'm proud of in terms of the PUD and also just the public service. You know.
Well said. It's comments from the public, item two. Are there any comments from the public on items not on today's agenda? Please raise your hand. No hands up online or in the room. Next, we'll move to our consent agenda, item 3A, approval of the minutes of the special meeting of September 18, 2025, and the regular meeting of September 23, 2025. 3B, bid award for professional service contracts and amendments. 3C, consideration of certification/ratification and approval of district checks and vouchers. I'll call for a motion.
I move approval.
Are there any comments from the public regarding the consent agenda? Please raise your hand. Seeing any, are there any questions or comments, commissioners?
I have none either.
I'll just make a comment. We had one of our bids. We had several bids, and the highest was, I think, more than double of the winning bid.
Incredible
spread.
Yeah.
All right, I will call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Next is our CEO General Manager briefing sitting session. This item is for the board and our CEO General Manager to discuss issues among ourselves and the UD staff. Today we have Chief Customer Officer John Hoplin, who will facilitate discussion. Good morning, John.
Yes, good morning, Commission, and thank you for letting me try this again after a year ago when I fumbled through it, so I appreciate that. We have an action-packed agenda for you today, starting with our media update and Aaron Sweeney.
Good morning, Commissioners. Good morning, John. Media report for today, or for October. Getting ahead of myself here. All right. So we had a great event out in Sultan, kind of a ribbon cutting for the side channels that we built out there. The Herald did a really nice story. They had a reporter and a photographer come out. You know, I walked with them for some of the time, and they were just really amazed at how much work our natural resources team did on this, you know, and kudos to Andrew and Dawn. They talked to the reporter a bunch, you know, and the whole natural resources team just did a yeoman's effort out there. So I thought the story turned out really well. And just gave them some credit. The engagement team, you know, Kelly Stickney's team did a great job too with the event. I thought the event went really well with the speeches and everything like that. So just glad that the story turned out really well and you know, did a nice coverage on it. Harold also did a story on our Connect Up program. They had a customer reach out to them. A reporter reached out to me, and we talked through a lot about privacy, our opt-out policy, meter access, why we have access to the meter. I felt like the story did a fairly okay job in kind of refuting some of the complaints that the customer had and walking through why we do have access to the meters, talking through about the opt-out program and how it is a pretty generous opt-out program. So,
I'm just curious that how many customers they interviewed.
They interviewed. So that was one part that we really were happy with. We did get them in touch with a positive customer. That was really nice because the installers, we asked the installers if they had any customers who would be willing to talk to the media. And we had a couple actually just really excited about the program and were willing to chat with the reporter and go on the record. So that was nice. I wish that the it would have been a little further up in the story, the positive comments about the program, but control that.
Yeah, we can't control it.
We cannot.
And it's unfortunate that such a low opt-out rate that we have an article both. I agree. So it's where we are.
Eaton, one of the vendors that we're using for our SnowSmart program, put out a press release talking about our working with them and how we're going to be using their equipment for reclosers. So that was picked up by T&D World at Public Power Daily, a number of different places. Just a nice little story, just kind of talking about SnowSmart and all the benefits that come with it. The Wire. The Wire for October is focusing on storm preparedness, getting ready for possible outages. We're using obviously Zip and Zap and pushing people to our emergency preparedness webpage. We also have a nice little video that we did with Zip and Zap, building an emergency kit and kind of educating people how to do that. We also had a nice little thing in here. I thought we worked with Paul Kiss's group on hearing something odd. We had a customer who actually heard something on the lines. Our crews went out. It was actually failing equipment. And so we thought it was a good opportunity to just remind customers that if you are hearing stuff on the grid, you know, we don't know everything that's happening out there. So it's good to have eyes and ears from the public. So that was a nice little opportunity to work with Paul's group on that. And then of course, some nice connect up communications out there, passing 100,000 meters and then getting Jet Colin some praise. And then I get to brag on my team a little bit here. So we just had the NWPPA Excellence in Communications Awards. This photo, when Krista took it, we were out there. This was during the bomb cyclone. And I said, you know what? That's going to be an award-winning photo. And it was first place in the photography category. Beat out a lot of big utilities for this award. And it's just a really great photo, just showing the mountains and the city in the background. So some good things can come from storms.
A good thing.
Yeah. And then we also got first place for This Current. So this is Wendy Paris designed this. Really focused on kids, had some fun stuff in it. And so this won first place. And then we also took second in advertising for our 75th anniversary advertising campaign and third for internal communications, Kelsey Wiebe and David Kruger for Lightning Round.
Have we had first place in Current before?
I think we have, but it's been a few years. Yeah. And actually, for NWPPA now, we are in a different bracket with a lot of different larger utilities. So it's a lot more competitive. So we should be really proud of this. That's it for me.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
It's too big.
Set the bar high.
As there are a few things going on at the federal government level, we wanted to invite Jenna Peth up to speak about a government relations update.
It's not too long.
I'm happy to be the actual expert. I'm the expert.
Good morning, commissioners. I'm Jenna Peth, and I'm the federal affairs specialist for the district. And like John mentioned, just here to give a quick update on all that's happening at the federal level. There's been a lot of press and things like that. So just wanted to give you guys a few updates. So we're nearly a week into the federal shutdown, and Congress still has not reached a deal on funding the federal government. The federal fiscal year began on October 1st, but lawmakers hadn't passed the necessary appropriations bills or a short-term measure, which they typically have passed over the last several years to avoid the government going into that phase where they're only undertaking essential operations with essential staff. For us, just at the top, the main takeaway is that those essential operations with BPA and other key partners are ongoing. BPA is funded by us, the ratepayers, so they are not impacted at all. We've been in close contact with them throughout the shutdown, and they don't anticipate any immediate impacts. They have had seen some small impacts in terms of having to slow down their hiring that they were authorized to do, but other than that, they're not seeing a lot of their federal agency impacts. Last week, as some of you may have seen, the Department of Energy announced that it was canceling almost $8 billion in clean energy and grid enhancing projects. Fortunately, SnowSmart was not on that list, but we do expect, based on comments from the Department of Energy Secretary, that there will be additional cancellations announced later on this fall. We do not currently have any indication that we're on those lists, but we're trying to stay in close contact with both our DOE partners and our congressional allies to try and get ahead of that news. On the grant side, knowing that a shutdown was possible, we did work again with our DOE grant contacts to process outstanding reimbursements. And thanks to Leslie from the SnowSmart team, we received about $848,000 for May and June before the shutdown began, which will certainly help given that reimbursements will slow during the shutdown. We'll have more cash on hand for that particular project. We're also, of course, tracking federal assistance programs, primarily LIHEAP, and we have been in touch with the state. Unfortunately, they've done a lot of planning over the past few years on their part. So they're working off fiscal year 2021 through 2025 funds. So they feel fairly confident that they'll be able to fund this entire fall and winter season. So we're feeling good about their ability to provide those funds for our customers. But again, it's something that we're watching closely, particularly as Congress hopefully moves towards passing actual appropriations bills that would include LIHEAP funding.
And that's taking into consideration their large deficit.
Yes. It is a separate account. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That wouldn't be reallocated for another purpose. And we've checked with the Department of Commerce on that at the state level. Of course, we're keeping a very close eye on negotiations in the House and Senate to see if there's any kind of breakthrough progress there on those negotiations, and are happy to report back to you all with any important changes that we see, particularly those that would directly impact our customers or our operations. I'm happy to answer any questions you all have.
I'm just curious if they don't pass the bills for the appropriations, what is going to happen?
So in theory, we would be in an indefinite shutdown if that were to really be the case. I think that given the issues that particularly the Democrats have with moving a spending bill forward, one of those primary issues is the healthcare subsidies that were included in a previous reconciliation bill that was passed by Democrats. Those are set to expire in January. So after that kind of hard deadline, we'll see if there are kind of calculus changes on coming to the table. They might be, you know, more willing after some of those deadlines expire, but we will just have to see. But again, in theory, would be an indefinite shutdown.
Thank you.
So first thing I did is find a list of all the projects that had been. And I noted that there's a couple of utilities in Oregon, but most things in our state looks like they might have been centered just around hydrogen.
Yeah, that was the
manufacturer. And so I'm wondering what's the nature of the other projects and are they truly canceled or are they sort of suspended?
They are truly canceled. Some of the projects that we've talked to that had grant funding received termination notices from the Department of Energy. So they don't anticipate receiving any additional funding. They do have 30 days to appeal that decision. So we don't know what that process looks like. This is a very, this historically has not happened frequently. So there's not really a lot of precedent to work off of. I also anticipate that some of the larger grant recipients will probably sue the federal government in pursuit of those funds, just based on lost funding for planning and things like that, that have gone on the front end of those grants.
And any of these projects started?
Yes, many of them had started. So for example, some of our APPA and Large Public Power fellow members, SMUD, LADWP lost grant funding on projects that were already underway.
Thank you.
We heard from Portland General Electric at PNA last week, and they lost well over $350 million on Central Oregon transmission projects that were intended to unlock clean energy projects. A lot of folks scrambling to figure out what the next steps look like.
Yeah, wow. Scary.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right.
All right, and now for two topics related to our water utility, Christina.
Morning, Christina Art, manager of the water utility. First, I'm going to start off with the daily base charge. Today, we're really just briefing you on the proposed change. We currently have a fixed monthly charge, and we are looking to change that to a daily calculated base charge. No action today. We'll come back later with a resolution. Currently, the water utility has a fixed monthly charge, like I mentioned. It's at a rate of $27.64 in 2025, and that is the single-family residential rate. The rationale, we've been trying to move this to a daily base charge for a few years, but we've finally kind of locked it down and we're able to come to you with it now. The industry as a whole has been moving towards this in assessing basic charges on a daily basis. And it just increases the transparency. It also aligns with differences in the duration of our customers' billing cycles. Those can range anywhere from 28 to 33 days. And then it also allows for easier proration calculations when customers are moving in and out of our systems. And then it also aligns with the electric utility and how they do a daily charge as well. And this is just showing that right now, a single family monthly fixed rate customer charge is the $27.64. Going to a daily charge, it'd be 92 cents a day. And on an average 30-day cycle, it would again still be that $27.64. This change is not going, we're not proposing to make this change in 2026. So it'd be a January 1 improvement.
Can you go back, please? Only for clarification for the people that might, they are listening, but they are not here and present. So when you are going to change this, it won't be impacting the total, right?
No.
Okay.
No. Over a 12-month period, they would still pay. It would be the $27.64 per month. It just depends on their billing cycle. So some months might be higher because they've got 33 days, whereas some months might be lower. But ultimately, in a 12-month period, it would be the same.
Thank you.
Again, we're going to come back later with resolutions and then not implement this until 1 of 2026. That's all I have on that.
Questions, commissioners?
No, I didn't have any questions on this one.
It's 1 cent.
Thank you.
I'll just stay up here. Okay, so the next one that we're bringing today, again, Christina, Art Manager at the Water Utility, is the City of Everett Purchase Cost Water Adjustment for 2026. Today, again, we're just going to brief the board on this. It's a pass-through cost adjustment. No action today. For some background and review, the City of Everett Purchase Water accounts for historically anywhere from 25 to 30% of the water utilities operating and maintenance costs. The City of Everett over the cumulative amount of years since 2018 has been about a 35% increase from what we've seen, particularly starting after the 2020 year. As of January of 24, the cumulative rate actually impacted the water utilities O&M costs of about 6%. And 25 and 26, we're looking at about 7.5% impact on our O&M costs. And then currently the City of Everett in 26 is looking at a 13% increase off this water to the water. Again, last year we came and we added this to our policies around the pass-through, giving the commission the discretion to change the rate from time to time. We do put this into our rate model and our COSA service model. We've looked at that extensively once again this year, and that's how we came to the pass-through rate for 2026. This pass-through adjustment helps increase transparency. It also helps isolate the incremental cost that does impact from the City of Everett rates to the water utility costs. The proposed rate based on incremental impacts from City of Everett in 2026, such as consumption, filtration, monthly meter fees, is about $4.5 million in purchased water. That's about 30% of our 2026 O&M costs. So the proposed pass-through, is 2.5%, and that would also not be effective until January 1st of 2026. Again, we'll come back with some recommendations and approval from the board. And this will not go into effect until January.
And this is already in both budget.
Yes.
Right.
13% is a big increase. And then after a series of years of big increases, I know they're doing some capital upgrades to their system.
Yes, they've had quite a few capital upgrades.
Are we in a position to get with them and understand their math and understand how they allocate their costs to themselves and other customers to make sure that you think this is a fair?
That has been a topic of discussion with the water leadership team, something that we are trying to look into. They haven't been as open in the last few years, but we are trying to have those discussions.
Do they still have any customers that are unmetered?
I believe they do.
Those are the old.
Because in their ordinance, they haven't broken out by all their different customer styles, and I do believe they still have some.
And those are the old neighborhoods.
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah.
And do we know what their proposed residential increase is for next year?
For theirs?
Yeah, for their own.
Off the top of my head, I don't. Mm-hmm. I'd have to look back at their ordinance.
Any other
questions? No.
Thank you.
And that was our last briefing for the commission.
Wow. Okay, next we have item 5, our CEO General Manager reports. Do you have a report for the
panel? Yes, I do. A lot of exciting things happening at the district, starting with our October Wellness Challenge. Our Wellness Challenge for October focuses on strength training. From October 8th to October 29th, employees are encouraged to complete 1 to 2 strength training sessions a week. Participation supports increased strength and muscle mass, better joint health, and improved balance and coordination.
Are those sessions that are done here?
No, I believe.
Or are we just doing off staff?
Jenny assures me that me opening up my fridge doesn't count. So if you come up with something, let me know. So also on October 9th, the district blood drive. The district will host a blood drive on October 9th. Donations will support patients in urgent need, including those undergoing cancer treatments and victims of accidents. Sign-up information is available on teampud.com. Our engagement team partnered with Safety and Natural Resources to attend two great community events on Saturday, September 27th. At the Imagine Children's Museum World of Play, children and their grown-ups got to learn about electrical safety and outage preparedness, and also a chance to meet Zip and Zap. And at the return of the Salmon Festival in Sultan, Team PUD, including our CorpCom team, Natural Resources team, and Facilities team, showcased conservation work at the Sultan Salmon Festival, leading tours for 80 attendees, including elected officials, and receiving strong public praise for the new salmon channel. We also had our first Woods Creek field trip of the 2025-2026 school year this past week. 100 homeschool students attended from all over the PUD's service territory. And last but certainly not least, the district successfully switched from BPA's block slice to load following product, becoming a network transmission customer. The change was seamless thanks to coordinated efforts across power supply, scheduling, legal, HR, finance, generation, ECC, and rates. The power schedulers did an amazing job of managing the block slice product and the district resources right up to and then through the switch, and everyone in the group is much appreciated. And that is our last update.
Questions or comments on the report? Glad we made the switch, and it was a big lift, I know, and I appreciate all the work. Set us up for the future.
Yeah, well.
And we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see.
You're waiting for their shoe to drop?
No. I just, you know, give it a year under my belt.
I gotcha. Okay. Next, item six, public hearing. I will open the 2026 proposed budget hearing and cost of service analysis. We now convene a public hearing on the 2026 budget and cost of service analysis. We have Sarah Bond, who will provide a presentation. Not much discussion, I'm sure.
Good morning, commissioners. All right, well, today we're kicking off the first of four public hearings for the 2026 budget, and then we'll also have a continuation of our COSA discussion. So today, I'm just going to give you just a few highlights of the 2026 budget. You have also received in your package the 2026 budget book, which has quite a bit of detailed information in it. So we're just going to cover some of the highlights today. I'm going to talk some about the electric system sources of funding, and then we're going to talk about rates and COSA. So this is just, I'm going to read all these words, but this is just kind of a reminder of just a recap of what we talked about at the last meeting in September. You know, as we've gone through this budget process, you know, we've continued to face our financial pressures that we've talked about from inflation, operational costs and mandates. We've had some weather events in 23 and 24, which had an impact on our reserves. So the five-year budget and the proposed budget that we've proposed, that we're giving to you, is really trying to get us back on track. We've done a lot of work with cost management, looking at use of debt for capital projects, and so we've had some discussion about rate adjustments. So this is just kind of a recap of the things we talked about last time. Just really quickly, just a reminder, the communities that we serve, you know, why do we have a budget here for the PUD? You know, we're the second largest public owned utility in the Pacific Northwest, the 12th largest in the nation. We have over 880,000 residents in Snohomish County and Camino Island, and our service area is about 2,200 miles. We have a very large service territory of lots of customers. You know, we have a lot of assets that this budget helps support that we maintain in our service territory. Work here. There we go. Sorry about that. We've got all of the substations that we maintain. We've got all of our vehicles and equipment. We've got, you know, almost 100,000 transformers. We've got all of the assets, the wood poles, metal poles that we inspect and maintain. We've got all of our distribution, overhead, underground lines. So we have a very large territory and a lot of work that we do on an annual basis that this budget supports. And we wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, the people, right? The people that work here. What is Team PUD looking like in 2026 budget? So we've got 1,300, Even employees, if you have to add them all up together, of our full-time equivalents. Majority, of course, are in electric, for about 1,226. Our generation system has 33.5 employees, and water system has 40. We look at it from a permanent versus time-limited. We're pretty much mostly regular full-time employees, about 1,198. And then if we look at our contract type, we're a little more union than non-union. So just a quick look at our team PUD. Note that, you know, we did do some work in the 2026 budget, and we did reduce the number of permanent FTEs, looking at some vacancies that we felt were no longer needed. So we did reduce some dollars in the budget with that work this year.
Some of these time limited employees are connected up.
The vast majority of them are, yes.
I'm going to go back to, on this slide, a question that I've asked earlier, and I need clarification. Upper left, total employees, full-time equivalent. That's not necessarily bodies, right?
Yes.
The number of hours.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Number of bodies would be a little bit higher.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. But it's the number of
number of hours, yes,
hours
actually
that have been budgeted.
Yeah.
I like this is a change. Over time, this has changed, right? I really like this much better. I believe it allows you to really get a better look at what's going on in terms of hours needed, I guess, and also flexibility within the organization.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Thank you.
Of course.
I get a lot.
You know, continuing on the FTE, you know, we do work really hard to make sure we're maintaining consistent levels. You know, of course, we have a really, you know, the graph on the right showing you, you know, Snohomish County is growing, right? It's still a growing, and we have, you know, our work changes when it grows, but we try really hard to make sure that our FTE count matches the growth in the county. So the chart on the left shows that we've stayed pretty steady, right? We haven't, our FTE count per 1,000 customers has not risen. You know, there's been slight blips here and there depending on, you know, different activities with folks, but we've worked really hard to make sure that our FTE levels are maintaining our service levels.
Again, another observation. This wouldn't have been possible without the continuous improvement, the priority given to automating our system and upgrading our system. We couldn't have maintained this level.
Yeah.
We agree. Yeah, that's that, and the fact that we are prospective out a number of years in our planning.
Yeah, I think another way, what I was thinking is, you know, we're essentially flat. We're making really bad improvements. Well,
investment.
Brought this improvements are now, customer service score is going up. So it's not like we're just maintaining what we had over this life of this graph. We're improving.
Right, be more efficient.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So really quickly, let's talk a little bit about today's, I'll talk about sources of funding. At the next meeting in October, we'll talk about uses of funding. So let's talk about where does our money come from? So this graph, this is the 2026 budget. So if we look at all of the sources of revenue that we're using for this budget, we're about $950 million. Of course, the vast majority of that comes from our energy retail sales from our customers. Kind of going around the graph a little bit, we also will spend a little more time talking about this next time, but we are planning on using some bond funds from our 2025 bond issue to help pay for capital. We've got a variety of other operating revenues that I'm going to talk about shortly. We've got customer contributions, which are reimbursements for some of our capital work. We've got our other energy sales, which is the aggregated energy sales that are new from the load following product. We've got our investment income, so investment on our cash. And then we've got some grant revenues budgeted for our Snow Smart grant. So those are the revenues at the moment that we are planning on for the 2026 budget.
What is other energy sales?
So this is the aggregated energy sales. So when we switch the load following product, we'll be selling some of the output from Hancock and Calicut. And so this used to be the wholesale energy sales that we sold on the market, but that's going away with the load following product.
and the other operating revenue.
I'm going to talk about those in one more slide. Okay, I think I'll cover that, but if I don't cover it all, let me know. So really quickly, looking at our loads, the budget of 767 is relatively flat from our 2025 budget when we're looking at it from a load standpoint. We are actually expecting to come in 25 budget a little bit higher. We're hoping that 26 will also be maybe a little more positive than this, but this is our budget. We're looking at about 50%, 7% of our load is coming from our residential customers. We've got about 350,000. About 36% is coming from our commercial, about 35,000 customers, and the rest is coming from our industrial customers. But we are expecting pretty flat load. And just a quick look, I think it's just always kind of fun, just a reminder of our top 10 largest customers, our commercial in the commercial industrial space mostly. They account for about 10% of our energy retail sales.
Surprising the Navy uses so much.
Eating all those ships, probably. Right. Yeah.
Which one?
Navy.
Oh.
Yeah.
Just another quick reminder that we do also offer an income qualified discount program. About $8 million is expected in 2026. You can see some nice growth in that program. We have dedicated staff now who are focused on this wonderful program. It's reflected in the budget as a reduction of our energy retail sales. But something we like to make sure we're looking at every year.
Rent increase from 22. I'm not saying that in a negative way. I'm just saying the needs.
Absolutely.
Well, if we went farther back, we would see.
Oh.
It's got up even. Yes.
Yeah, a lot of substantial changes to that program in the last few years.
Yeah. I think it's more expensive.
So here to your point, so other operating revenues, there's quite a few things that make them up. I already talked about the energy wholesale sales. That's that aggregated energy sales, the sale of that power. We also have excess transmission capacity sales. So if we have additional capacity, we're able to sell that on the market.
And that doesn't have anything to do with what we just the transactions that, because didn't we sell off
Right. This is something we've been doing for quite a while. However,
yes.
I do think it has changed a little bit, though I'm not an expert on that particular. I know the numbers it's more this year than it was supposed to be last year because of the, thank you.
Am I confusing apples and oranges? When I saw this, I thought,
Jason Ziskowski, Chief Energy Resource Officer, and you're correct, Commissioner Olson. So that's from that excess point-to-point transmission that we have.
All right.
Yep, okay. We've sold that more on a long-term basis. Okay. So we will be selling it short-term, and that work has been completed.
Okay. Well, this is not that.
No, I believe that is that transmission capacity sales.
Oh, this is what this is. Oh,
yeah.
All right, thank you.
So this is, you're saying we sold it on a longer term basis, and this is the annual revenue.
That's correct.
Because now are we using NT?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah. So majority of our point to point, we converted over NT, but we couldn't convert all of it.
Okay.
So the leftovers we sold on a long term basis.
Okay. That's a part of it. Okay. I thought those would be zero. Thank you.
Thank you, Jason. Miscellaneous service revenues, there's quite a few things that are in that bucket. One of them is the reimbursement we've received from BPA for our energy conservation assessment. And then also, customer service fees, like disconnection late fees, et cetera. And then rents from electric property, I think mostly that's joint pole contributions. And then also we actually get some rentals from renting buildings. So there's quite a few things that go into that bucket as well. So those make up our other operating revenues.
So energy wholesale, what?
That's actually the aggregated energy sales.
I talked about earlier.
And I just realized that, so it's a new term now. We've been calling energy wholesale sales for a long time, and I'm going to have to get used to this new terminology here. So I think we're trying to figure out what we're calling this new source of revenue since it's a little bit different, but that's really what that is.
Okay.
Forgot to move on up. And then just really quickly, let's switch to talk about rates. You know, we came to you last meeting with a rate proposal, and we're adding a few slides here to have some more conversations. So if you look at the rate proposal that we're talking about in a second, we work really hard, just like we do with the FTE, is to keep our line below inflation, right? So you can see if we look starting in 2020, our rates have been below the level of inflation. We added a line this year with the top one, the green, which is showing kind of, if you look at just the average cost of electricity across the USA, starting also in 2020, that they have not been able to keep up with inflation. So I think we're doing a pretty good job being able to maintain this level.
You know, this is something, commissioners, that I'm worried about in the future. Public utilities, Northwest, being preference customers, a lot of them expensive power. And I've used rates going up and up and up for various reasons. I always wonder if there's any chance in the future that those rules could change. We might not have preference.
Open up the power.
The Congress could, open the power. So I just think as that discrepancy gets bigger, there's more potential for members of the Congress to realize that we have a pretty good
influence.
Us and our customers have a pretty good deal.
I don't know.
It's something to watch. I mean, look at the divergence. That's just not IOU specific.
Yeah, that's just average. Very good.
That was just really uplifting.
Well, look at the next table.
Yeah.
This has been happening the last few years.
Yeah. So this is just a reminder, our peers are really, they're dealing with the same things that we are in many ways. And so you get to see the nature of some of the rate increases that we've seen the last 2 years. So just wanted to kind of remind everybody that we're not in this alone, right? It's a public utility trend right now.
Also, it's a good example of just sort of looking at some of these utilities. You can see a utility that looks like they maybe waited several years to do one and then did an enormous rate increase and not had one this year. So it also illustrates the value of having
the
small rate increases as we go.
Exactly.
Yeah. And if it sees, interesting.
Yeah.
And finally, before we transition to the COSA, so we presented to you some numbers, a rate scenario last in September, and we came back with a different proposal for your consideration today. So what we have done is we've adjusted the 2026 and 2027 general rate increases down, and as requested, did not impact our budget. So we did not make any planned expenditures to budget, but it does change our days cash on hand trajectory slightly. We're still meeting our minimums by 2027, which is what we're expecting to do. So this is the scenario that we're hoping to discuss at the COSA in just a moment.
When we looked at this last time, the residential was 3.5. What was the general was 3?
Yes, there were 3% in 2026 and 2027. And that made the residential 3.5, I believe. Right. And those are really the only major changes that we made.
Yeah.
I guess I'll wait till we get to the COSA and more detail on these rates. But one thing that came to mind was, from a customer's perspective, what does this mean a daily or monthly in terms of average change of their bill? And it's not in here. I can't tell.
Yeah, no, I believe Christina's speaking next, and she may be able to speak to that. If not, I'm sure we can provide that information. Yeah,
because that's what the customer would relate to.
All right, well, on that note, I'm going to hand it over to Christina.
Thank you.
I believe you might.
Good morning, Christina.
Okay, I'm going to do that. Good morning, commissioners. You might notice I am not Peter Dauenhauer, as was originally on the agenda. He had a little bit of an emergency this morning, so I am Christina Leinweber, and I will be discussing the cost of service results. with you. So, just a reminder, and of course, for those who are also maybe listening to the presentation online, what we just discussed is the first step of the cost of service analysis, which is the revenue requirement piece. And that's the budget and what we project in particularly in the next year and then for the future years. And then that those numbers get passed off to do the cost of service analysis and looking within that budget of asking which customer categories and groups are driving those costs. And that is answers the question of who causes the costs in these budgets. And that's the stage that we will discuss next. And again, as a reminder for everyone, we had a workshop which we discussed this in great detail in July, talking about best practices and the need to move toward always closer and closer towards COSA, but in a gradual and planned way. What does this mean?
Do you want us to wait at the end or can we on this slide, can you remind me of the rationale for this slide?
Yeah. Yeah, so there is a desire to go always closer and closer to cost of service because yeah. That's what's most legally defensible and most economically efficient. And each utility really has to decide for itself how fast they want to go that to that path. There are some utilities that will bite the bullet and do it in 1 or 2 years, but that often that risks having some customer backlash. Then you can go more slowly. So what we have recommended in consultation with our consultants who look at different utilities of our size and type, you know, across the nation, thinking that trying to do it over a 5-year period is pretty reasonable. It's within the range of what utilities do. And certainly that's part of feedback that we would love to hear from you as well, if you think that we should go faster or slower on this glide path. Because that is one of the estimates where there is no particular exact rule that's coming. And so at the last commission meeting on this topic, we presented to you the results that came from a 3% system average rate increase, as was shown previously in the earlier portion of the presentation. We then recommended from that a 3.5% residential rate increase. Since under those numbers, the residential rate increase for the cost of service level was about 8%. So after adjusting the numbers to make a 2.5% system average rate increase, the residential's cost of service adjustment dropped to 7.5%. And we're coming to you with the recommendation of a 2.8% rate increase. And that is roughly, don't hold me to every penny, but that is roughly about $3.22 a month for the residential class. Yeah. I have, yes. Somewhere in that range.
And have we done analysis yet to decide whether that should go into the fixed daily rate or into energy or to both?
Our preliminary recommendation would be for that to go into the fixed rate. Our fixed cost recovery is still less than what the cost of service would indicate. So we'd like to continue putting it there.
So then the increase you said was $3 and
yeah,
20 cents a month.
Yeah.
So it would be $3.20 a month for all customers.
Yes.
Yeah.
On average. Now, of course, we have the small, the medium, the large, and the extra large.
Oh, I thought that was just residential. That's for all customers.
No, that's for residential. But if you will recall, we have the residential customer charges that vary by amp size. So the small will be less and the extra large will be more.
That much intensity.
That is just all right.
Well, I guess in my...
I'm just trying to look at it from a relative.
My point, Commissioner, is it for whatever size service they have, it go up a fixed amount a day.
Yes, yes.
It won't go up more for people that have all electric homes.
No,
right.
Or people with, you know...
Currently, our residential fixed customer charge is 49 cents a day for the small amp sizes. That's for the multifamily, the apartments, and the small amperages. And the extra large size is $1.86 a day. But those are for the extra large, which we have only a handful of.
Example?
So those are for extremely large. Often people who have maybe multiple buildings, you know, like a big garage and a house and stuff. We only have, I want to say it's like 12 in the service territory or something like this. A very small number.
So what would it, what is it for the 100 to 200 amp?
For the 100 to 200 amp, it is 49 cents per day. And for the 200 to 400, I believe it's 80 cents a day. Let's see. Yes, right here. Yes. So the small service is multifamily or up to 200. Yeah, 200 to 400 is the medium. And then the extra large is greater than 400 amps, which is ginormous. That's a very technical term there.
Well, I get this part.
I have a question about the 4.7 remaining to adjust. So last meeting we talked about, because we have more certainty, the recommendation was that large customers residential that we tried to get within 5%. So does that suggest that next year, if we do the analysis and we're at 5 or less, that this number is less? Wouldn't necessarily need to take another bite.
Well, of course, it would depend on what where the numbers fell in that year. Mm-hmm. But that would be a point of discussion because we are within the 5%. Now, as a rates person, I always want to get closer and closer to that cost of service amount. So I would probably recommend that we consider continuing to get closer and closer, in part so we don't get ourselves into this situation again where we're very far off, but that would be an opportunity for the commission to continue to discuss our philosophy.
I understand that the residential is also 2/3 of the revenue.
Yes.
So if it's off 5%, it makes the others.
Yes, that's the other thing is that we are, the other customer classes, the medium generals and the small generals are paying more than the cost of service would indicate. And that can be a strain on particularly small businesses, especially considering how big the residential class is. Any more questions on this slide? So from that 2.5% adjustment, assumption for this year, we have calculated a new trajectory to show you what we might recommend, and just going towards Commissioner Logan's question of what might we do in the future, we're still showing a slightly above system average rate increases for the residential class, but only by, you know, here we have 2/10 of a percentage point in 2027 and then a little more in 2028 and forward to get closer and closer to, you know, what warms my heart as the rates person is those nice rows of zeros there at the bottom. And being, you know, right on to the where the cost of service would indicate and getting rid of some of those overpayments for the medium and small general classes. We are in a better position than we are last year because we did increase the residential rates last year. And so that was very helpful this year. And it allows us to get much closer on our 5-year trajectory and goals.
What was the percentage, the increase last year?
I'm trying to remember what for residential it was.
What was it? Sorry. No, that's quite all right. I have it on my spreadsheet here.
I want to say it was 5.8, but I'm not sure. All I have is the cost of service numbers here from last year. I don't have the actual implemented. But we can certainly get that to you.
Okay, thank you.
I knew we did take a big one time for the previous year's MLK weekend.
Yes, that is.
Beth, just I remember for that.
Yeah, for the benefit of anyone listening, last year we had come in and done the whole rates process up until January with a much smaller increase, and then we had a severe weather event in January that we had to do a unexpected upward revision.
Yeah.
Great. Then I will turn this back over.
Any questions?
I don't know if this is the time to bring it up. But as I was thinking through this, and they come after the board asked that to take another look at 2026 rate adjustment, particularly for the residential class. We are clearly in a much better position than we were 2 years ago. However, I think as we think through this, we need to consider that the world is a little different today, and that number one, storms continue to happen. One storm can cost us $10 million, a lot of money. Two storms, double it. We're probably not going to see FEMA money again for another 8 years. And that has helped us tremendously in terms of covering some of the costs of the storms. So where does that come from? That's a cost that we have not had the burden of in the past. So those are the kinds of things that I'm considering. We're moving into a new product, bulk power product, and it looks good. But we don't yet have a year under our belt with it. And we talk about the grant money. While that's more near term, hopefully it'll work out. But you know, there's some other large numbers hanging out there that we may never see, and that's got to be paid from then by the customers. Will be paying the full going rate for them, and. So those are the kinds of things that I'm considering in terms of how to keep pushing this 5-year window out. And my focus sometimes is looking at front loading some things, because then future years, we won't need as much if we need to increase rates. So I just want to be a little cautious of some things that haven't happened yet, but that could very well happen, that could hit us pretty hard. So.
I appreciate that. I mean, there's also potential upside. We've made more progress this year on our cash on hand than we. And we have had a tendency, although I think maybe not this year, to underspend our CapEx. And that has kept our cash on. And so maybe we're not doing that anymore. I don't know. Not that we tried not to do it.
Which
spreads things out too.
Yeah, it does spread things out. And therefore, benefit, you know, gain the benefit.
Yeah.
That's also pushed out. But I just think that we should not be blind to the fact that we need to consider that We're not going to see some of that money again. And anyway, got to put the system back together. And if it costs $10 million.
I have a question. I always I like to see different scenarios. So what will be the scenario if we don't do the rate adjustment for 2026? What will be happen?
I can actually respond at least at a high level. Not doing one in 26 really put a huge impact on the future years. It was, I think, I didn't bring the numbers with me, but it made 27 need to be closer to a 4 just to get us kind of to the same end result. So 26 is, you know, the compounding impact is pretty substantial. So we could definitely show the numbers, but it was definitely going to put some really big numbers in the out years.
So would that mostly impact capital or would it impact?
0% rate increase,
of course. Yeah.
It's just not having that revenue coming in and not just impacted days cash on hand pretty substantially.
And we sort of promised to our creditors that cash on hand is going to reach our target
by next year.
Yeah. So to stay on that trajectory, if we had a 0% rate increase, I'm assuming that would have things like the level of tree trimming and
We would have to definitely, if we were going to do that, we'd have to go back to the budget.
Castle upgrades.
Changes, yeah.
Yeah, what projects could be more impact by if we don't do?
Well, that's what we'd have to do. We'd have to go back and have those conversations and make those decisions and reprioritize a few things.
Thank you.
Well, we could put it this way. What does the 2.5%, how much does the 2.5% increase revenue? How many dollars is that?
We have dollars here. It moves us from 751 million to 770 million over the rate period. So, about $20 million, roughly. Very rough.
Well, I am thrilled that it looks like we can maintain our trajectory to get to our cash on hand with only a 2.5% general rate increase down from 3. I mean, that's an enormous achievement. I do understand the risk that Commissioner Olson's talking about. I think there's a potential upside risk too, but I agree. It seems like we're in a dark time for some things, and FEMA it very much concerns me. I'm also thrilled that we are able to keep the rate increase for our residential customers, the one I think are our customer owners, down below 3%. So I'm really supportive of this, and I appreciate all the hard work.
Jeff Bishop, Chief Financial Officer. I just wanted to touch base on a couple of comments. Great questions, by the way. Relative to storms, we did increase the funding this year for storms, looking back at a multi-year average. So we have increased the amount of dollars set aside for storms, just looking historically how impactful those have been. So we'll get you exactly what those dollars are.
They have been included. There hasn't been a specific storm budget.
We do have storm response dollars set aside for when crews go out to deal with after hours and then also storm-related work.
Major storm?
Yeah, we can get those dollars for you.
We have been budgeting for majors.
Storm response, and we'll get you the clarity on storm.
Yeah.
After hours work versus major storms.
Where you're getting dollars.
Yeah, well, and again, we'll get you those dollars. I think in terms of when those major events do happen, obviously FEMA was an important resource for us when we have major damage on our system. We do have the RSA, which is in place specifically for reasons like that, the rate stabilization account. We also have the ability when we get into the operating year to reduce costs and look at different measures by which we can hopefully still mitigate some of that impact. I would highlight, I know that from a legal or from a government perspective, we're actively out working forward on the bipartisan bill to hopefully restore FEMA. We'll see where that goes, but it sounds like things have been progressing well from that perspective. Relative to going to zero, that's always top of mind for us, right? What can we do to minimize the amount of increase that we're bringing forward? It will highlight, I think it was almost $12 million we've already cut out when we went back and looked at the initial requests that came through. All very good business cases. We've already pulled $12 million out to get to the point that we're seeing right here. We have taken out publicly to the investor community that we would expect to have a 3% increase based upon our trajectory over the next 5 years. But again, just to highlight kind of what's been taken out publicly, and then also some of the work that's been done up front to get us to the numbers that you're seeing here, just for more context and background for you.
Well, you know, we, in a long time, seen some pretty large rate increases there. But I, as a commissioner, and I'm sure my fellow commissioners, we don't want to raise rates for customers. That's something that we really don't want to have to do. But on the other hand, we have these things hanging out, unknowns, the world's a little different today, but also customers' expectations. They're expecting more from us. And that costs money in terms of the investments that we're making in the systems. So I kind of look at it in terms of moderate adjustments as needed. That's why I asked for the monthly rate or the daily rate for the smaller customers, 49 cents a day, 50 cents. We were to ask the customers, are you willing to spend that so that we can continue doing this and this and this? My guess is we would probably, for the most part, see that, yes. I don't know, but that's kind of the way I've looked at it. And I've also lived through the time when we went 10 years without a rate increase, 10 years, and had a mountain of capital work that had to be done. I mean, we built up Mount Everest, and it was huge, and there wasn't enough money to keep the system at a level that it should have been, and it really lagged in upgrading when it was necessary. So I'd love to have zero rating, zero rate changes, but I do think we have to be realistic in terms of where we are today.
You know, I think if we look at slide 15 and inflation, I just think there's so many inflationary pressures, some very specific to our industry, transformers and such, that frankly, it's phenomenal that we can actually close the budget to 2.5%. And also this graph of the table you just had, table 17 there. Yeah, there's the inflation. And if you look, 17, the next one forward, you know, if things end up worse, Commissioner, we do have an opportunity to make subsequent year rate increases that are a little larger than we're budgeting to. So,
but we have to recognize that, and this 5-year window here keeps moving. One where we say, yeah, 5-year window, we're going to be here, and then it tends to move.
Yeah.
And, I tend to be with our great experts here. I should like to get that down to zero. In other words, and it's we are overseeing a company that is owned by our customers. Mm-hmm. And we can then, with this, we continue to say to the customer, your asset, we're not making enough money to cover the cost of doing business. And, you know, how do you feel about that?
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. it's tough, though.
Yeah, for me, it's all the cash on hand to agree to a target.
You're right. You're right.
Market understands that's the target when we sell bonds. So we're almost at that number, and we're actually forecasting to remain slightly above it, which gives us a little margins. We just have to keep our eyes on. Thank you for your additional time.
Just have one final slide just to wrap up next steps. So I'll be back October 21st, and we'll do a deeper dive into the expenditures for the electric system and the five-year forecast. November 4th is going to be all about water. So we'll be talking about water and then the rate proposals. And then November 18th, if we have any proposed changes to show you, we will bring them to you. And then we'll be asking for approval on December 2nd.
I will say I really appreciate and be happy for having this rate and most of the conversation early in the process. To think about questions like question, it's really a job for all probably ask and questions I asked last time. This is a lot better process. From my perspective. So
yeah,
I appreciate it.
So do we approve the COSA with the budget, or do we approve the COSA as a separate act?
I don't know.
That's a good question.
I think the process was to agree on it sort of simultaneously.
Yes, so you will need to approve the budget as one action, and then what will be coming to you as far as rates with next is the actual rate design. So that question that Commissioner Logan asked, you know, are we going to do it in the fixed and the variable and what's that look like? So then we'll show you those numbers and gather your feedback on that, and then you will need to approve the final prices before they can be implemented.
Will that happen on December 2nd? Maybe that's sort of the question.
Oh, I do not. I think that it has been scheduled for that day, but I'm not,
okay.
110% sure. So.
And that's, again, a process and a preference question for commission. I think ideally we were trying to parallel track the rates and the budget discussion to go hand in hand because they are intertwined. The thought would be to have everything approved or at least potentially acted upon on the second.
Oh, really?
Second, with two separate resolutions, separate actions, but you'd take those on the same day. Or historically, rates have been done later, right, early.
Which it doesn't make sense to approve a budget, any of us to approve a budget if we're also not going to approve the rating and execute the budget. So I think it makes sense to do it on the same day.
So what's in the proposed budget now? Because this was an alternative.
The original proposed budget was the 3%, but the budget book and all the numbers that you're seeing now have the 2.5%.
Oh, they do. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
No questions or comments? Thank you very much. Great information. Good conversation. Yes, we can. First, let me ask, are there any comments from the public regarding the proposed budget? Please raise your hand. You know, hands up. Commissioner, do you have any further questions or comments?
No, I appreciate the conversation.
I'll call for a motion to continue the public hearing on the 2026 proposed budget.
I motion to continue the public hearing.
On the 2026 proposed budget be continued to Tuesday, October 21st, 2025 at 9 a.m. at 2320 California Street in Everett.
Thank you. I'll call for a vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Motion passed unanimously. So it is about 10:29. Let's come back at 10:40 and take a small break. All right. It is 10:40 and we are back.
Here.
Next, we have item 7, public hearing in action. 7A, consideration of a resolution declaring certain rural property of the district located at 9124 271st Street, Northwest Danwoods, Washington, to be surplus and authorized in sale and transfer the property. I'll call for a motion.
I move approval.
I'll now convene a public hearing. We have Brian Barnes available to answer any questions. Are there any comments from the public regarding this resolution? Please raise your hand. No hand raised online or in the room. Commissioners, do you have any questions or comments?
I have none. I think they you have all the information ready.
I have no questions either.
Well, I appreciate that we sell things we're not going to use, so I appreciate that. I will now close the hearing, and I will call for a vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Aye. Motion approved unanimously. Next, 7B, consideration of resolution declaring certain real property of the district located on 268th Street, Southwest Stanwood, Washington, tax parcel number 32042000401800 to be surplus and authorizing the sale and transfer of the property. I'll call for a motion.
I move approval.
I'll now convene a public hearing. Maltmarie Mart is still available to answer any questions. I will ask the public if there's any comments. Please raise your hands. See any comments? Hands raised online. Commissioners, do you have any comments or questions?
I have nothing. Marine brief. Marine brief this in our last meeting on the previous one and this one.
Okay, we'll close the public hearing. I'll call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Okay, next is 8. Items for individual consideration. Introduction of a resolution authorizing the CEO General Manager or designated executed amendment number 1 to the wholesale water agreements between Public Utilities District number 1 of Snohomish County and the City of Snohomish. I'll call for a motion.
Page 7.
One down. No.
There you go.
I move
to hold this resolution over to the next regular board meeting to accommodate the statutory period required before the adoption. Dean is available to answer any questions. Are there any comments from the public regarding the resolution? Raise your hand. Hands up. Commissioners, are there any questions, comments?
I have none.
Okay. I'll call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passed again. 8B, consideration of a resolution authorizing the CEO, general manager, or his designee to execute an agreement for purchase and sale of renewable energy credits between the district and Lime Wind LLC. I'll call for a motion.
I move approval.
Seems available to answer any questions regarding this. Are there any comments from the public regarding the resolution? Raise your hand. Are there any questions or comments, commissioners?
I have none. Our briefing's on this started.
Call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passed unanimously. Next, item 9, commission business. 9A, commission reports. Do you have any reports, commissioner?
I want
to talk about the progress we've had working with Energy Northwest on our conditional approval, Joe Fina and others, but Joe principally has been very actively involved, has met with Energy Northwest staff, really has gotten us to a place. Well, actually, he's really improved the process for all of Energy Northwest customers. And so I very much appreciate the hard work Joe put in on it. But I really feel like we're in a lot better place to get our questions answered. So we're headed towards doing conditional approval, which isn't a statutory requirement, just an Energy Northwest pulling on the thing to continue forward. And we'll have criteria that when the three of us vote on the polishes, full approval or not, we'll be in a position to have good information about any potential risk to our organization or the Northwest, which was my primary concern, to make sure that our utility and Energy Northwest protected. Of course, because Energy Northwest rates potentially could affect Bonneville's rates through Columbia. So anyway, Joe is really been great to have him. See his fingerprints over the last couple of meetings. Energy Northwest has presented.
That's so why we're back on it.
Yeah.
For those that may be listening in, can you give a real brief synopsis of what this is?
Yeah, so Energy Northwest is working on a plan to build and operate a small modular reactor next to a piece of land that's close to Columbia Generating Station, the only operating plant in Northwest. And that that parcel has been approved in the past for a nuclear plant. So there, the off-taker at this time would be Amazon, and Amazon would be the one with the capital at risk. It's incumbent upon us to make sure that we don't take on any risk.
Yeah.
And so, you know, a small modular reactor is a, I think, old nation sees as an advantageous thing to help increase our ability to produce green energy. And so there's an alignment here, and so we'll see them happen.
Thank you.
So it's an interesting some partnership. But this, there could be public off-takers, but at this time, I think anyone's signed up.
So, okay, thanks. And thank you for that, spearheading the work on this. Seeing the potential for issues and bringing Joe on board.
Yeah, well, it's interesting, you know, being on the board, because the main board doesn't really take on much. Executive board does. So this is a unique thing in the state laws that require the board to actually approve the projects. And it's really nice to get professionals like Joe take a real look at it.
Thank you.
Any other reports?
I have none.
The next is 9B, our commissioner events calendar. It changes the event calendar.
You and Commissioner Crosby are going to the annual PPC, so it's you and the PINA.
I haven't made a decision yet, but I imagine that I will.
No, I'm just asking. There wasn't anyone listed.
Yeah. I have a hotel reservation.
Oh, okay.
So I wasn't able to go. I had some of my own for a family emergency, and I feel like it was. I needed to go to Portland this time, so I missed Peanut, unfortunately. So it's in there.
Yeah, well,
I was able to listen to PPC.
It
was very interesting. And then tomorrow is the public power fuel meeting. Those could be pretty
what's the topic of that?
I don't know.
Or did they have a topic?
If they do, I don't know what the topic is.
Well, I'm sure we have at some point.
Yeah, sometimes it's just a question and answer. It's a place for the electeds to ask the questions that might be too embarrassing to ask in a PPC executive.
That would bother us.
Well, I have to say, I have to really get passionate about something to decide to raise my hand to see a crowd full of experts.
Yeah.
It's an interesting meeting where we've got a board. And they're surrounded by even more people than on the board, and anybody can ask a question. The board member of the Peanut Gallery, as I like to call it, can ask a question. So, yeah. Okay. Let's move on to 9C, our August 2025 District Performance Dashboard. Are there any comments, commissioners, about the dashboard? It starts on page 171 of our packet. all I'll say is I'm really impressed at how our customers are using the digital platforms more and more. I did. Really surprising.
Just have to give a quick shout out. I don't know if you noticed, we are now over half of our customer base is on paperless billing.
Yeah.
Wow, that's huge. I still miss my paper bill, but I'm a little.
But thank you for being
brave. The paper storage.
Thank you.
I'm the only one I get this paper.
What?
May I ask, are you also on auto pay?
No, I do bill pay from.
Okay.
But it was a huge, for me, it was a huge impact to go to have the smart meter be able to set my billing date. So, I can pay all my bills once a month. So when you get your smart meter, I know you and your neighbors are unhappy they haven't gotten it yet. You can pick your date. Anything else on the dashboard? Okay, 9D, our 2025 Treasury Budget and Project Status Report for August. This is on page 174 of the packet. Any questions on the, is there a bond here? Any questions?
Page six, I did notice transmission distribution projects looks like it's going to be 10 million underspent budget versus forecast. 85 when the forecast of 75, but in the bottom paragraph on the right hand side, it did give a reason why. Moving some things out. And island cable payment delayed due to manufacturing. Because you speak a lot to the sometimes discrepancies in the capital spend. But there's a reason for it.
Right. No, I think those things get harder to buy.
Yeah.
You can't just spend them.
Yeah, no, I know.
I agree. Thank you. Any other comments or questions?
No.
I very much appreciate this report. I know a lot of work goes into it, Sarah. Thank you. Okay, 10, our governance planning calendar. Are there any changes to the governance planning calendar? It's on page 190.
Oh, I needed to be somebody to remind me on October. That was to, I guess, a discussion that was to a scheduled for today. It's being moved. Cooperative purchasing interlocals. Can someone remind me of what that is? In our governance planning calendar, for today's agenda, it's being moved. But can someone explain to me what that is? Cooperative purchasing interlocal.
So my name is Jeff Kallstrom. I'm the Chief Water Operations Officer. I'm going to draw from my past experience in legal. So this is an agreement where we can piggyback off of other governmental agencies who have purchasing agreements. We enter into an interlocal where we can then piggyback. Exactly. So it's that type of an arrangement with other areas.
Like the state negotiates contracts, KCB.
So it's similar.
So it allows us to take advantage of favorable terms negotiated by others and our purchasing efforts.
So I was thinking, there's been discussion over time of some kind of a cooperative thing with Publix.
This is not that.
That's not that, because that's got several issues with it. All right, thank you. Okay, thanks.
Okay, you almost done for panel. Any other questions for changes to governance planning calendar? Okay. Is there any further business to come before the board today?
There's none.
All right. Hearing none, it is 10:56 a.m. and our meeting is adjourned.